Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Welcome into Behind Enemy Lines, a collaboration between the Pack-A-Day Podcast with Andy Herman and the Paul Farrington Show. Paul, joined by Robert Ziggy Ziegler up at Harvard University. Andy Herman, of course, is with us as well. How you guys doing? Week seven, We're really cruising through the season right now. Andy, congratulations on yet another Packer victory, sitting atop the one seed. You know what's funny, guys? I put out a tweet from our show account last night that just said, like, somehow the Packers are the one seed. And it took on quite a bit of steam as like 100,000 something views. And a lot of people in the comments are like, well, dude, it's because of winning percentage. And I'm like, no, I understand actually how this is happening. I'm just saying it's somehow with this 4-1-1 record and 4 weeks of looking okay, the Packers here are the number one seed. It's kind of unbelievable.
Well, to your point, the NFC is insane. Like the NFC, like the top like 10 teams or 9 teams, whatever it is, are like at 500 or better. Like it's been a really competitive and difficult conference. The NFC is completely beating up on the AFC in all the interconference games. So like the NFC, all the wins are going to the NFC and you just end up with this huge disparity. And then you look at the top of it, you're not expecting a team that, you know, is sitting at, you know, one tie, one loss, to be a team that's on top of the conference when it's been that good and that competitive. But yet here we are, Packers at 4-1-1 with a fan base that is not thrilled with the way that their team has even been playing, is sitting at the top of the conference, which is, it's just been a very interesting season so far.
Yeah. I'm looking right now. The Bengals are 3-4. They're the 9th seed in the AFC right now. You'd have to go down to the 13th seeded Commanders at 3-4 in the NFC. And it's like, if you just start naming all the bad teams in football, you'll probably say the Saints, but then Jets, Titans, Dolphins, Browns, Raiders, Texans. I mean, the Ravens without Lamar have been atrocious. It's both fun and annoying that the NFC is this good. But Ziggy, at least for us, you know, if we're going to be uncompetitive this year, at least it may as well happen in a year where our hopes are slowly going more and more down the drains. Is it was just announced. I was furious. It was just announced again that Carson Wentz will be starting on Thursday Night Football for the Vikings against the Chargers. JJ McCarthy now missing his fourth consecutive game miss? No, this is five. This is five,
yeah,
now.
This is team number five.
Oh my gosh. All right. How are you feeling about that, Ziggy?
I'm seeing a lot of people say if this is a soft benching or if the Vikings are keeping him off the field because they don't want him to play. I don't think that is true. But as you talked about the season going by quickly, as a Vikings fan, I cannot wait for the season to be over. Take a mulligan, let JJ McCarthy get healthy through the rest of the season. I know he'll probably start playing in a week or two, but this season is totally lost for us. As you say, like 3-3, in most conferences and most years would be good enough that you'd be looking at it and saying we can compete. I don't think we have a chance of making the playoffs this year. The Bears right now are slotted in at that 7th seed at 4-2. I think anything less than 10 wins is not getting you out of the NFC. I've accepted it. It's nice. Maybe our quarterback will start playing well. We're having a pretty typical Chicago Bears-esque season. We're just waiting for our quarterback to play good and otherwise nothing else matters. And I can live with that once in a while.
Yeah, I think that's a nice viewpoint to have, Ziggy. Acceptance is important, and I'm glad that you've gotten there because I'm watching the Eagle game this week, Andy, and midway through it, I don't know why, I felt pretty good the whole game. And Carson Wentz is going up and down the field. It's just he keeps having these atrocious handful of plays a game that doom us. But I still thought we were going to actually win the game, which is very unlike me. I'm a pessimist at heart, and I'm trying to be an optimist. But I felt good. And midway through like the fourth quarter, as it started to look bleaker and bleaker, I turned over to my father, and I was like, oh my God, Dad, I actually think we can be a playoff team. I really think that we can be good enough to be a playoff team if a few things break our way. And You know, I'm gonna wind up hurting myself again. But with JJ, as far as JJ and Wentz goes, it's like you can't get mad at JJ for being injured. You can be frustrated with it, but I'm not gonna sit out here and be like, you have to throw him in there at like 80%. The worst thing in the world is he re-aggravates something and misses the season. I'm just so fed up with the whole Viking QB situation and watching all the guys we let go continue to play so well that I'm just done with it, Andy. Like, Ziggy's accepted and I'm just done.
Let me ask you a couple questions. Yeah. Number one, if JJ McCarthy went out those first 2 weeks and looked unbelievable, right? Like 300 yards, 3 touchdowns, no picks, good one NFC offensive player of the year, both weeks, not just the 1 week, just unbelievable performance. He plays against Philly, right? He plays this week for sure, right?
Yeah, he plays
this week. It may not be a soft benching. I think there's a lot more urgency if he looked awesome those first 2 weeks to be like, yeah, let's, you know, he's not going to be the emergency three. He's going to be the starter and we're figuring things out from there. And we'll try to protect him. That's just my view. You guys would know way better, but it just feels like if he completely tore it up those first 2 weeks, there'd probably be a little bit more urgency to try to get him back in.
Yeah, I think
that's probably right, Andy. Like, if you look at players coming back from high ankle sprains, usually it's one of the more judgment call returns in the NFL because guys can be ready to play usually in 2 to 3 weeks. But we saw with Saquon a couple years ago, if you rush guys back, there's a real risk of re-injury. So teams have taken different approaches, right? The 49ers held out Jimmy G and Christian McCaffrey for a long time when they were in playoff races. But yeah, if the Vikings were competitive, if we thought JJ McCarthy would be a huge upgrade, I'm not sure if he plays last week. I guarantee you in a must-win game against the Chargers, he's playing on Thursday.
O'Connell also said that if the game was Sunday, you know, and that might just be coach speak, but he was saying if the game was Sunday, JJ might have an opportunity to go. But something that I actually record a little solo episode that's going to come out later for on our channel, but I mentioned this before, you know, when the injury first happened, Adam Schefter said 2 to 4 weeks. Then, and we're going, okay, you know, let's be reasonable here. He'll come back after Europe, which is 4 weeks. And then on Sunday, it was always supposed to be 6 weeks. Maybe he plays against Detroit. It's like, okay, well, Detroit would then be 7 weeks. So, like, what's really going on here? I'm not totally sure. I do agree with you, Andy, as you wear yet another Notre Dame hat, which looks great. Just joking around.
I know.
I do agree with you that if he was playing really well to start the year, I do think they'd rush him back. I also think if he was 100% that they would let him go, because it's just when you're watching Wentz, there's too many mistakes. Like, he's not playing like Sam Darnold was last year. Wentz is playing better than McCarthy did earlier in the year, but I just don't think that there's any true, I think Kevin O'Connell can see the writing on the wall with Carson Wentz as your starting quarterback. So I do think JJ actually is still hurt, but I also agree with you that if he was ready to go, or if he was playing great to start the year, then we'd be a little more aggressive saying, okay, like, we'll take 90% JJ.
I also think that there's, maybe this is not their thinking at all, but even if it's not, it might work out better. Well, let's just say the Vikings lose this week and maybe even McCarthy can't go one more week and then they lose another game. I do think that there's a little bit, it's almost like a better opportunity of like, hey, we went with Wentz for the last few weeks and it was loss. Cause if you go McCarthy and then McCarthy struggles, everyone's going back to get Wentz back in the game, put Wentz back in. We won a couple games once or whatever. Whereas I think if Wentz all of a sudden loses a few in a row, like everyone's almost like pining more for McCarthy to come back and maybe has a little bit more accident forgiveness once he does come back. Again, maybe that's not the thinking, but it might almost work out better that way. The other question I have for you guys is season ends today. Season's done. It's over. What's the Vikings plan in the offseason at quarterback? Do you think it's unquestionably, it's just JJ McCarthy's team? Or if the season ends today, are they more aggressive in quarterback shopping? Maybe not. Like, it's a really, it has to be semi-delicate. You can't spend like a first round pick on a quarterback. I don't think you could go like big game hunting at quarterback, but like, I'd be very interested to see. Season ends today. You still don't have a definitive answer on JJ, what their strategy would be in the offseason.
I think everything, if the season ended today, like Philly game's over, we're moving on. McCarthy is going to be the starter next year. Like, that's, okay. You know, that's what I believe would happen. there's just not a, like, who's even out there this year? Like, it's going to be Daniel Jones, right? And he's not going to.
Aaron Rodgers? No.
Look, I mean, I was all for it last year, but like, I think Rodgers, if he did come back, would probably return to Pittsburgh, and Daniel Jones would probably return to Indianapolis and get a decent deal, maybe.
Maybe you make like a Mac Jones play, like a trade for Mac Jones, just to be like a half measure, something like that. It's just it feels like a weird no man's land to some extent.
Yeah. Like, I mean, Mac Jones is an interesting, I would just don't think any Viking fan would be happy if they brought Mac Jones, who's played well. He's playing decent, but that's just more, it's the same, right? It's bringing in another Darnold or another. And the whole point of McCarthy was we're trying to find the guy. So that's where I've just been so vocal about, like, again, you can't get mad at him for not playing, but the frustration is we need to see him on the field. And if he's not on the field, we have no idea what he is. If this, again, season ends today, if the Vikings loved a quarterback in the first round, I would have no problem with them taking it. But it would have to be someone that O'Connell like firmly believed in more than McCarthy, right? And if that's the case, I'm for it, because I like JJ as a person, but I know nothing about him as a player. And the roster's too good right now to keep throwing him out there and just watching him in the recovery room.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It's also a really tough scene when you are a first-round pick, you're expected to be kind of the new face of the franchise, and you miss, 22 of your first 24 games as an NFL pro?
Not on the field.
Yes, it's really, really tough. And just brutal for an organization, too. When, I mean, I know that he wasn't, you know, Darnold, probably the way he played, would have stayed the starter all throughout last year anyway, but just missing those reps in practice and not getting to be as involved, even if it's on scouting, whatever it ends up being. And then, you know, to come out this year to be the starter and have at least success in the fourth quarter and get some confidence and then not play well. And then all of a sudden you're out again. It's just, it's as brutal of a scenario for you that you could possibly have for like picking a top 10 quarterback, being excited about it, and then just through 24 games, having almost no answers of where you're at with things.
Yeah. It's like the worst case. And Ziggy, I know, I sorry, I'm talking a lot on this. So just one more point, and then I'd love to hear you hear your opinion as well. What I've also kind of struggled with is trying to find, like, you can't really find a scapegoat in this situation. That's what you're talking to, Andy. It's like, it's just the worst case scenario, because I saw an article today about how Vikings management is what's failing them. It's not Carson Wentz. And it's like, I don't know. I was okay with going with McCarthy, and it's hard to get super mad at O'Connell or Kwesi because they took a bit of a gamble, right? At the same time, they hadn't seen JJ. That's what you were saying before. When he's out with a meniscus the whole year, he's not on the practice field. So they don't even know what he really looks like other than the beginning of his rookie season. So even if you want to get mad at someone, it's like, it's not like O'Connell, you know, misanalyzed him. It's just he didn't get to look at him at all. And I don't even know where to place blame. That's why I think it's just like, it's the worst possible situation you can have, because the guys took a risk. And it clearly has not paid off. And he's still, you know, a 2-week injury turns into a 5 or 6 week injury, 7 week injury. And it's the same story all over again. It's just really bad. It's really bad.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, I think if you're the Minnesota Vikings, the question cannot be who to blame. Like, Kevin O'Connell is not getting fired. Kwesi is not getting fired. I do not think that the decision from this needs to be move on from the coaches. Or
no,
the GM.
No, not at all.
But I do think the decision might have to be, if a guy like Drew Aller in the draft, who has a lot of talent, but is maybe a little bit less exciting, slides into like day two or day three.
Are you kidding?
I could absolutely see the Vikings taking a shot on a quarterback in round two or round three next year.
Drew Aller will not be a round two quarterback next year.
Look, man.
Drew Aller.
I'm not throwing out particular names there to analyze.
You are throwing particular. You throw out Drew Aller.
If the Vikings like a quarterback and he starts sliding down the board, I think it would totally make sense to take them and say, J.J. McCarthy's starting this year. But if by November, a year or two, he's not looking better, we've got to figure out where to move on next.
Yeah.
Are there Vikings fans calling for O'Connell or Kwesi?
No, not at all. I didn't want to.
I almost was going to feel better because we have Packers fans calling for Matt LaFleur and Brian Gutekunst sitting on top of the NFC. So it would have made me feel a little bit better because O'Connell is obviously a really good coach. You know, even being 3-3 right now, navigating the season so far, to me is not worst case scenario. I do think it's going to get worse before it gets better, but we'll see. You guys are still, I think, in very good hands overall.
Yeah. The one thing I do want to watch for the Minnesota Vikings, though, the trade deadline is coming up soon. I mean, you can make an argument that the Vikings should be interested in trading some players away for draft capital next year if they're not going to compete. There's a lot of valuable veterans on this team. But also, I mean, November 4th isn't very far away, and the Vikings have been shown to add. It's tough given the expectations to try and move some guys away. I'm very curious to see what the Vikings do there because this is a team that's not winning a Super Bowl or even getting particularly close. But selling players, I think, would feel really tough too.
And they can be competitive. That's the problem, Ziggy. It's hard to go and tell a coach, like, sell the season, right? When they're sitting at 3-3 and O'Connell's probably rewatching the game tape against Philly saying, all right, we're 1-6 in the red zone. If we convert a couple times, we're moving to 4-2 on the year. And now that chart, like, the Vikings can very well win, and they probably, because they're the Vikings, they'll go into LA and beat the Chargers, who have been floundering lately. And like let's say Carson Wentz goes and beats LA. It's just, we're doing this whole, it's going to be one of these years where it feels like we're kind of loosely competitive, but everyone knows we're not good enough to really win. Like, would you prefer, Ziggy, that they just fire sale this?
I mean, I wouldn't fire sale it because I think that you still need to be competitive next year. But if guys who aren't going to be around a whole lot longer, like say if the Indianapolis Colts call and say, we're willing to give you significant draft capital for Isaiah Rodgers, am I willing to make that move? I'd at least really think about it.
But Rodgers seems like one of those guys that you'd want to hold on to. Like, you know, younger cornerback who's been playing pretty well. I'd be upset if we start trading guys who I think can be on the team for the next handful of years. I thought you were talking more like if someone comes in and wants to make a move for, I don't know who it would be. Maybe you're talking like,
I mean, the players like Javon Hargrave, I don't think anyone really wants.
Yeah, it might probably be like Grenard, but, you know, do you want to move Grenard? Probably not.
We'll be right back. Today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. Now, you and I get to make decisions every single day, but on Prize Picks, being right on those decisions can get you paid. Don't miss any of the excitement this season on Prize Picks, where it's good to be right. Time to start getting ready for Week 8. It's the big one. Aaron Rodgers faces Green Bay on Sunday Night Football. This one's going to be epic, and I'm already all in on Jordan Love in this game with a huge performance. Elsewhere in Week 8, I'm going to go with big games for Patrick Mahomes, Baker Mayfield, and if he plays, Lamar Jackson as well. Here's the best part. Prize Picks is the only app that offers stacks, meaning you can pick the same player up to 3 times in the same lineup. Want to pick more on Lamar Jackson passing yards, rushing yards, and touchdowns? Now you can pick all of them in the same lineup only on Prize Picks. So what are you waiting for? Download the Prize Picks app today using code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. And don't forget that code PACKADAY. Prize Picks. It's good to be right. Guys, it's 2025. The days of going to the doctor for emergencies are over. No more waiting until walking it off for 6 months doesn't work or your fingers are numb from texting, I'm fine. It's time to take our health more seriously and get things checked out when we need to. That's where ZocDoc comes in. ZocDoc makes it easier than ever by helping to find the right doctor quickly and easily. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare high-quality, in-network doctors and click to instantly book an appointment. You can filter for doctors who take your insurance, are located nearby, and are highly rated by verified patients. Appointments made through ZocDoc happen fast, typically within just 24 to 72 hours of booking, and more often than not, you can even get same-day appointments. I've already had family members who have used ZocDoc and loved it, and I'll absolutely be utilizing it on all my appointments from here on out. So stop putting off those doctor's appointments and go to ZocDoc.com/Packaday to find and instantly book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/Packaday. Again, ZocDoc, ZocDoc.com/Packaday.
All right. So as you can tell, Andy, we're really unhappy, very, very confused.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing for you guys is, I mean, these next 2 weeks probably decides it to a pretty strong degree, right? Like, if some reason you go, or somehow you go 2-0 on the road against the Chargers and the Lions, all right, well, there's no talk of trade deadline, right? Like, you're not, if anything, you might be considering all of a sudden, like, oh, things are going well. Are we looking to purchase a piece here? If you go 4-4, you're probably, or, you know, at 4-4, you go 1-1 in these two games, you're probably just saying status quo, letting things continue to play out. If you go 0-2 against the Chargers and the Lions, though, and you sit at 3-5 in the NFC North, where it's a really tough division just to break the 3 spot right now, and the writing's on the wall, not to mention a conference where, again, you're going to be like in 11th or 12th place in the conference at 3-5. Like, then I think you look at it and can say realistically, all right, like, we're not going to fire sale, but yeah, if there's a piece or two that somebody comes calling for that doesn't have a future on the team, it probably makes sense at that point.
Yeah. If they beat the Chargers, I think they're going to continue to approach the season competitively. If they lose to the Chargers, look, are you bringing back JJ for a game at Detroit? Like, that's a tough game to just throw your rookie back into, or essentially a rookie back into. You know, maybe you just go Wentz again, if you you know what I mean. Like, it's a difficult situation to navigate, but the one that I'm kind of expecting is, I actually don't think he's going to play in Detroit at this point, and I think we'll see JJ McCarthy again against the Ravens, and we'll probably be 3-5. And at that point, maybe in some sense we can find a positive that the pressure kind of comes off, and the goal becomes more of, hey, over these final, like, you know, 8-9 weeks, whatever we have left, let's just get JJ to a point where we can evaluate him properly at the end of the year as, do we want to go forward with him? That's sort of where I'm thinking. It's very disappointing overall.
I didn't really put 2 and 2 together that the Packers play the Vikings week 18. And the more of this goes on for Minnesota, the more likely that Minnesota is just, you know, looking towards the future and not, you know, maybe super competitive in that game. If you need a win in week 18, hopefully Green Bay is like well ahead and that's just a glorified preseason game. But yeah,
you guys are
when you feel better about it.
Yeah, it's your guys' backups versus JJ McCarthy battling for his job.
Let's go. What we need is another just a glorified preseason game, week 18, what everyone loves.
So we could get off the Vikings here. It's just an ugly scene there in Minnesota right now. Andy, we can talk about your Packers
potentially coming back, though. That's a positive.
Yeah. Again, they beat the Chargers and they're 4-3, and all of a sudden the Detroit game, it's like, okay, if you win this now, it's amazing how quick it changes in football. But that would be a huge game if they're 4-3 going to Detroit. They'll probably get murdered, but you find a way to win a couple games, and I don't know. It still is all kind of open for Minnesota, but it feels a lot worse than a 3-3 record looks at the moment. Let's go to the Packers. Let's talk about something with more, I don't even know if it's not happier for me, but happier for you, Andy. 27-23, you guys beat the Cardinals. Let me ask you, 4th and 2 rolls around, you're on the 29-yard line, and Matt LaFleur calls timeout and sends the offense back out. Were you happy about that decision?
Yeah, big time. I wish you didn't have to use the timeout in that scenario. And Matt actually doubled down on that yesterday as well in his press conference of, you have to be able to make that decision quicker because you're down to 2 timeouts already. You use that one, you're down to 1 timeout. And now, yes, technically, if you don't get it, you've got a timeout and a 2-minute warning. You can maybe get the ball back with 1 minute and change left and go down and still try to get a field goal or whatever. But if they get 1 first down, the game is over. And it now feels like everything is riding on this 1 4th and 2 play, which is not exactly where you want to be, of course. But that being said, I thought at the time, if this was like a 35-yard field goal, if maybe you just had Brandon McManus and not back, even though Haversick has been unbelievable and is now 10 of 10, including a 61-yarder for Green Bay, if there were some other scenarios, maybe I'd be more open to kicking the field goal. Even in kicking the field goal, you're now in a way like just hoping for overtime, or I guess maybe a turnover, because even if you make it, you're tied, and now they've got the 2-minute drill and you've got 1 timeout left and you're not going to be able to stop the clock. And if they even get remotely in field goal range, now you're just hoping for a block or a missed field goal or something like that. That's not the position you want to be in either. So it did feel like to me, you got to put it, if it was like, again, if it's a 4th and 18 or something, whatever, but you're 4th and 2, you got to go for it. They did. They converted. It was a huge play in the game. They were able to get the touchdown after that and win it. But no, without even the benefit of hindsight, when they were even lining up for the field goal. I thought, go for it. Once they were go for it, I was all in. And even if they wouldn't have made it, I still feel like that was the right decision at that point in time.
Yeah, I thought it was the right decision too, because frankly, you couldn't stop Jacoby Brissett from going up and down the field. I mean, you guys had a lot of bend, don't break moments, it seemed. Yeah. But it was just, you're watching that game going like, all right, what's going on with the defense? You know, Micah had a few huge sacks, but it was just another one of those games where it felt like all of a sudden, you know, Jacoby Brissett is unstoppable here. And, you know, there's a couple big third down conversions, like what they had a 3rd and 24 and a 3rd and 14 they converted.
Yep.
Which just can't happen. And I think we're again, a handful of plays away from a comfortable Packer win, but they just seem right now, they seem to be making a few mistakes every game that just lets their opponent stay in it. And has you nervous at the end. Like, is there a concern for you about the defense right now, more so than like even last week?
Well, a couple of things. I think, first of all, yes, there's probably a couple of plays away from this being a more convincing Packers win. I think they needed to go 4 for 4 on the field goal before the 61-yard field goal before halftime, a 4th and inches stop late in the game,
yeah,
a 4th and 2 conversion, and a
Rashawn
Gary forced fumble that set them up. I don't think if any of those 4 things happen, they win that game. So, yeah, I mean, there definitely could have been some other things on the other side that swung in Green Bay's favor, which is the league that we live in right now. It's a league where 1 or 2 plays go slightly different, mm-hmm. and the other team's winning. But I think they legitimately had to go 4 for 4 in those scenarios in order to get that win. And thankfully they did. As far as the defense goes, definitely some level of concern. I don't think this is going to be who they are in total, but this really felt like, oh, this is the same, like, kind of not great Packers defense that we've seen in seasons past. Oh, but also they have Micah Parsons, who just at any given moment is going to give you a huge, huge play. So it's like, oh, we have this awesome, unbelievable nuclear piece that's unstoppable on one side. And then everything else is still kind of like a pig in lipstick, so to speak. So I do think that there is still that piece there where Micah came up with 3 huge plays, 2 sacks in the red zone, and then a sack on the final drive when Arizona's trying to go down and win the game. I mean, those are just unbelievable, massive plays, and his impact is even far beyond just those 3 plays. But everything else still absolutely needs to be better. Now, it was against Detroit. It was against Washington. It was against Cleveland. The first 3 weeks, they looked awesome. But then, you know, Dallas, Cincinnati, and this past week against Arizona, it looked nothing like that. So whether they need to get back to the drawing board, change things up a little bit more, do some self-scout, I don't know what it is, but they've got to be a lot tighter than that than they have been. Because if you're doing that against Joe Flacco and Jacoby Brissett, who, by the way, I thought both of them played fantastic in those 2 games. But to the same point, if Dak Prescott, Joe Flacco, and Jacoby Brissett in back-to-back-to-back weeks look like Hall of Famers against you, that probably says more about you than potentially, you know, those quarterbacks.
Well, and it's something you got to figure out pretty quickly, because you will be playing an actual Hall of Famer in football next week when you go to Pittsburgh.
And the weird thing is this is sort of the like quarterback that Green Bay is struggling with. It's a veteran quarterback who knows how to get the ball out of his hands quickly, that's not standing in the pocket for a long time, not looking for big plays. The quick passing game and quick diagnosing of the defense is exactly what Flacco and Brissett and Dak Prescott have done the last 3 weeks with a ton of success. And that's Aaron Rodgers to a T. They've also struggled with tight ends a bit. The Steelers use a ton of tight ends. They struggle with big outside wide receivers like Jamar Chase and George Pickens. And in this past week, Marvin Harrison Jr. And now you've got DK Metcalf too. So it's not a great formula for what's given Green Bay struggles to what Steelers actually do well.
Aaron's been totally locked in too. If you go, I remember watching that Viking Steeler game, and it was mind manipulation to the furthest extent. Someone's blitzing, and Rodgers dumps it off right there. He's been on this year. So a lot of our Packer listeners are saying that you guys are going to get after him, put him on the ground time and time again. But if Aaron's doing his thing and gets it out quickly, same way Flacco was, it could get a little dicey. Like this should, I think it should be a pretty good game. Are you taking Nate Hobbs out? What are you doing with him right now?
Yeah, he should have been taken out, I think, in this past game, especially when you're in obvious passing situations. I think Carrington's just the better pure cover corner. It's one thing if you don't have like a viable backup to put in that situation, but when he's struggling and Valentine's there, just make the swap. I'm not saying you have to bench him, full time, or that going into next week, you can't play him or whatever. I'm halfway through my tape study for the defense in this past one. I don't think it was quite as bad for Hobbs as maybe it looked on tape, but it still was nowhere near good. And this defense, quite frankly, has been better when Valentine's been out there. And when Hobbs has been out there, it hasn't looked quite as well. I think they at least have to have some conversations, maybe go back to some sort of rotation in that scenario, or just, you know, Hobbs playing maybe on earlier downs and on more obvious passing downs as Valentine. I think there's things that you can do, but you definitely have to start asking some questions based on where his performance has been so far this season. And Matt said, he's like, he's going to bounce back. Like, he basically said, yeah, this has not been good enough from Nate Hobbs without saying those exact words.
Yeah.
Basically, you know, intimated it. But yeah, I think he does clearly need to play better than he's played so far.
That's my whole concern for you guys. It's what's going to happen in the secondary. Cause I'm not too worried about the pass rush. Like you guys, like,
yep,
you know, we know Micah Parsons is there. Rashawn Gary is very good. Like, I'm not worried about you guys being able to get after the quarterback. And I'm not worried about the offense really, especially with Reed and Watson, who will be coming back soon. So it comes down to, can you, like, if you guys are going to get in games where you have to win shootouts, that gets dangerous. And when you have, on the other side, Jared Goff in the Lions offense, or you're going to have Matthew Stafford and Puka Nacua in playoff games. If you guys can't cover those receivers, like, it's going to be a real big problem. And that's what I'm paying attention to, at least, with you guys moving forward, is can someone step up there? Because that was my fear. I know Jair got hurt with Baltimore, but my whole fear was, once you guys let him go, okay, who's going to step up? And Nixon did, but I think he's kind of coming back down to earth a little bit more. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, he's a fine, solid, consistent corner that is never going to be what you truly want as a number one. I think he's way better than some people think he is, but he's a fine starting corner that if he's your two, you feel really good. If he's your one, you're like, it's probably not good enough.
Yeah, it just feels like everybody kind of need to take a level up, right? Play one level up. And it, as far as the secondary in Green Bay goes, haven't seen it too far.
No, I think that's fair.
In general, I mean, it's comparing the 2024 free agent class, the 2025 free agent class does not look very good for the front office, right? You made two huge additions, one on defense, one on offense in 24. Josh Jacobs and Xavier McKinney have both been outstanding. And I wonder if they got a little bit aggressive and thought, you know, those guys played some of their best football in our system. We can project forward and think Nate Hobbs and Aaron Banks are going to start playing some of their best football in Green Bay. And at least up until this point, they look a lot like the players that the 49ers and Raiders were happy to let go.
It's one of my things I say, you know, when it comes to free agency, it's always better to be ultra aggressive and go get the big time players if you can, and just let those, you know, overpaid mid-tier players go somewhere else. That's where you, like, for instance, in this offseason, if you could take like the Hobbs and Banks contract and just give that to like Milton Williams or something like that instead and just go get a big player, you're probably better off than getting two mid-tier players, and you're probably going to feel a lot better about it. You usually have buyer's regret over some of that. Both Hobbs and Banks pretty immediately look like overpays. I thought they'd both be solid players for this team. I think Banks is probably a little bit better than where people think he's at, but he still has been nowhere near the contract that he's been given, and Hobbs has really, really struggled. So yeah, I think where Green Bay got kind of caught is they were a team that was ready to contend and they needed to make a big splash in free agency. And at that point in time, there was no Micah Parsons trade available to them, right? So they've got to go out and upgrade their team in free agency in some significant way. It was not a great free agency class overall. And they're looking for like around and looking for like, all right, who can make a big impact? I don't think they found it. They also have a very weird way of structuring their contracts that I think turns off some agents and free agents. So they're maybe bound a little bit by that. And they look around and they're like, oh, we can go get a starting guard and a starting corner. We feel good about that. And both were overpays. Hopefully they both play better, but it's not been great results so far.
You know what's funny? I just started laughing as we were going on this. Like, we're talking a lot of negative stuff about Green Bay right now, and they are the number one seed in
the NFC.
Welcome to
Green Bay talk radio and podcasting and everything else right now. With great expectations, you know, comes just a different brand, I think, sometimes of fandom. And I think as Mike Wall, who came on the show earlier this week, pointed out, when you go and beat Detroit in week one in a pretty significant fashion, you are now watching the rest of the season in a way almost through that lens of like, oh, this team can just go out and crush Detroit. So then if you can crush Detroit, you expect to certainly crush Dallas and crush Cincinnati and crush the Browns and crush the Cardinals. And when these games are losses to the Browns, ties to the Cowboys, and, you know, not exciting wins against the Bengals and Cardinals, it's just like, well, why is that happening? I saw what you did in week one. You're supposed to be this great team. You're supposed to be a Super Bowl contender, but it hasn't passed the sniff test. And now everyone, I think, is a little bit anxious, you know, buttholes are a little bit clenched, and you just end up a little bit different than maybe it would have been where if you were in the Colts scenario where you're expected to be a bad team and you sit at 6-1, you feel amazing. So expectations are a weird thing sometimes. And I think fans and this team are kind of going through that right now.
Yeah, you guys had about as good a start to the season as you could have over the course of 5 days, right, between the Commanders and the Lions game. And now it's,
yep.
But that's what everyone's sort of going through that this year. We said it off the top of the show. I think before we started, actually, we were saying, like, you know, everyone, you go through, San Francisco's got problems. They're one of those teams where it's, how are we 5-2? This is amazing, right? And then Philly's 5-2 as well. But most Eagles fans are really upset with what's going on this season and are a little perturbed about like the locker room in Philly. So it's just, you know, you go up and down all these NFC teams that are kind of good. We think they're good, right? But we're not sure who's great yet. Everyone's got their problems. And that I keep going back to with you guys that if you're going to have some problems that we all think the Packers can iron out, it's really like reassuring though that you have the record already. Like you're 4-1-1, you have that base. Like if you were 2-3 right now or something, or 2-4,
then it's like, in that world.
No, then it's like, all right, we got some real problems here. We got to play catch up. But when you're 4-1-1 and you still are working through problems, that's where it can, and you know, this is going to be horrible when it happens, but that's where you guys in late November, maybe you turn it on the way you did in 2023. But now this time you have the one seed in sight, not just a wild card. That's kind of what I'd be thinking if I were an optimistic Packer fan.
We were talking a little bit before the show, and it's funny, Greg Rosenthal, you know, pointed out he listens to a lot of fan podcasts, like league wide of like where, and he's just like, everyone's miserable. He's like, every fan base right now is basically miserable. And we were talking prior to the show of like, who's happy right now? And we kind of like Colts and Lions fans are like the ones that are happy. I think Chiefs fans are probably now feeling a lot better too, but they've got 3 losses on the season. So that's still something that's there. And the funny thing is about the Lions and the Colts from like a Packers point of view, the Packers beat the Detroit Lions in week one. So that should feel good, right? And then the interesting thing about the Colts, who have the best record in the NFL and their fan base is, again, has to be feeling great. They played the Cardinals the week before the Packers and had almost the exact same game. At the end of the game, the Cardinals are winning. The Colts have to go down to get a touchdown to go up by 4 points, which the Packers had to go down to get a touchdown to go up by 4 points. And then the Cardinals had the opportunity to respond and just couldn't ultimately get the job done. It was almost the exact same game. And that's the number one seed in the AFC who's been, again, kind of demolishing everybody. So it's just a really interesting aspect of, I know from a Packers fan standpoint, and even I will say this past game, it didn't feel the way that you would like it to feel. It's just, it's the rigors of the NFL right now. It is a jerk to play. The 3 teams right now that are on 4-game winning streaks. Can you guys name them off the top of your head?
I know Chicago. Chicago for sure.
Denver.
Wait, who's the other one?
I don't AFC, know number 3.
An AFC team, 4 in a row. New England.
Those are the 3 teams that have 4-game win streaks in the NFL right now. The Bears, the Patriots, and the NFL is weird.
The Broncos,
it's very,
too.
Very weird. And the sooner that everyone can accept that, your Vikings are probably about to go on a 4-game win streak. The Packers are probably going to go on a 4-game losing streak because that's the type of season this has been. It's crazy.
The Broncos guys have scored 13 combined points in the opening 3 quarters of their last 3 games combined.
And they're on a 4-game win streak.
It's ridiculous.
It's crazy.
I'll say this. I think this is what's nice about this Sunday night game for Green Bay is the past few weeks it's been, we've got to win with style points. You've got to put up a big score. You got to blow them out. This week, it's a binary outcome. If the Packers win, you get to be happy, I think, almost no matter how it happens. Because this is the huge game that Packers fans have been waiting for, I think. Like, it's since the Commanders game. And now that the Commanders are near the bottom of the NFC, who knows what to make of that game? But, like, that was the last time I think the Packers had a game I don't know if you feel this way, Andy, where it's just like, as long as we win, I'm going to feel happy. And I think this Pittsburgh game is that game again.
I hope you're right. I have a feeling that if they still win by one or two or three or something and it's ugly, that it's still going to kind of be the same thing. But I do hope you're right. I think it should be that way if they get a win. You know, the last time the Packers won in Pittsburgh, 1970 was the last time they won in Pittsburgh. It's been a hot second. So yeah, hopefully they can find a way to win this time around.
Are you feeling good about that right now?
that statistic in general, no. I do think this is a really tough game. And I do think Pittsburgh presents a lot of challenges for Green Bay in this one. We talked about defensively for Green Bay that their kryptonite has kind of been tight end, big wide receiver, quarterback that gets the ball out of his hands fast. And that's Pittsburgh to a T. And then defensively, you know, the offensive tackle, having Zach Tom back and healthier now is a lot better. But I mean, it's going to be funny. Everyone's going to point to TJ Watt of like, how are you going to, I'm actually almost a little bit more afraid of Nick Herbig and his speed off the edge. Herbig has been unbelievable for Pittsburgh in obvious pass down situations and those quick wins on the outside against the Packers offensive tackles. Pittsburgh allows a lot of yards. They allow a lot of points, but they also get turnovers and they get a lot of sacks and get you in some negative situations. I have nerves for this one for sure. This might be the first time all year I pick against Green Bay. Part of it is, again, just weird things happen for the Packers in Pittsburgh. They just can't seem to get a win there. You know, Rodgers is going to have the ultimate chip on his shoulder as well and want to play, you know, his absolute best game of the year. So I think this is going to be a very challenging game for Green Bay.
We call both you guys on our show blue sky franchises, where it seems like good things happen to your teams more often than not. And I think Pittsburgh is probably even been more so that lately, where like, how are they having these 9-8, 10-7 playoff years with some of the teams they're putting out?
Yep.
But one of the themes you always see with the Steelers is just the ridiculous turnover margins and huge, like against New England, right? Forcing 5 turnovers in that game, you're punching it out on the goal line. They did it to us. We a couple big turnovers. That's what I'm paying attention to is Jordan, like Jordan Love, right? We mentioned how many times, what, 1 or 2 a game, you said, yep, of those plays where it's kind of in harm's way. It's a bad decision from Jordan.
They're going to take him.
The Steelers will take advantage of that. So that's, to me, if we're looking at the Packer offense, Steeler defense, it's Jordan Love trying to somehow have, because they'll have, there'll be at least 1 or 2 of them with these two teams. But Jordan trying to have that play go your way and not Pittsburgh's. Otherwise, I think you're the better team. I think you guys are better than the Steelers. Just at night in Pittsburgh, crowd will be going insane. Probably a lot of Packers fans too. I mean, you guys travel great, especially playing Rodgers. But I'm just a little worried about the turnover battle and what could happen there.
I think it's totally fair.
So if we're gonna take a look here, maybe briefly at the Lions and Bears, if that's okay with you guys.
Yeah. Do you guys want to go over Chargers Vikings a little bit more though?
Oh, we can. Sure. Sure. Yeah. Let's do a little Chargers and Vikings.
Obviously big Thursday night game. So that's, you got a prime time game.
Yeah.
I am so tired of Minnesota being slotted in as the get right team. We were the get right team for Philadelphia last week. I feel like the Chargers are looking at us and saying we've sort of been sliding, but now we get to play the Minnesota Vikings at home. It's going to be our week.
Well, we're both kind of those teams that the Chargers have a lot of Vikings tendencies, it seems. From I've become friends with some Chargers fans, and a lot of the things we complain about with just like how the ball bounces during games and the luck we have seems to be reciprocated by these Chargers guys. And I think they've been one of the huge, huge losers, along with like Washington, right? This week, Jaden goes down, you're 3-4, really tough schedule coming up. The Chargers were 3-0. Seemingly in great place in the AFC West, and now they've lost 3 of their last 4. I know you said it's a get right spot, Ziggy, but it also could be a Viking quote unquote get right spot. Like, I actually feel pretty good going into this game. It's another one of those, as if Wentz cannot have that catastrophic play, I think we should be able to move the ball up and down the field pretty well on these guys. And Herbert's been good, but he's been making a lot. He's had a lot of red zone turnovers that if we can get some guys after him, I really think that the Vikings can win this game. Like, I actually think I might pick us to win this game, amazingly, despite what we said off the top of the show.
I am very nervous to see that Joe Alt is starting to get healthy. Paul, you remember from our time back at Notre Dame, like Joe Alt is a game-changing tackle. And the Chargers go into this season with what looks like the best tackle duo in the NFL, and they both immediately get hurt and are out for a fair number of games. But the Vikings defense, we really struggled against both Rodgers and Hurts in giving up big plays. If Justin Herbert gets an extra half second because Joe Alt's in there, I'm nervous. So I certainly, the Chargers offense has looked beatable, but with their tackles starting to get healthy, and I think the Vikings backpedaling after that Eagles game, you're a lot more confident than I am.
Yeah, but that's probably part of that like sick, like me talking myself into the Vikings being competitive, like finding, like we'll win and we'll be 4-3. I'll be like, well, I guess we have a shot against Detroit. And then that's usually when it'll come collapsing down. But does it feel, Ziggy, like we play the Chargers? I know, I think we played them, what, like 7 years ago or 6 years ago on Thursday night. It just feels like one of those spots that, you know, it feels like this game has happened several times to me for some reason. The Vikings on the road Thursday night in LA and we lose. I don't know why, though. It's only happened one time.
Yeah, I mean, it has happened. It happened in 2021. It happened in 2019. Like, we don't win in LA or San Diego.
I mean, Thursday night on the road is always a difficult place to go and win. And then when you add into it, like, you know, that Wentz has had his struggles lately, and it's a difficult spot for the Vikings for sure.
If this was in Minnesota, I would feel really a whole ton different yes. about Minnesota in this one. Being at home on Thursday night, and it does feel like the chart, even with Alt back, like Becton's been really bad at right guard. I still feel like there's ways that, you know, Flores is going to find a way to attack that Chargers offensive line. It just doesn't feel like the Chargers are clicking anywhere near on all cylinders yet either. And maybe you catch them at the right time, but having to go West Coast, play the Chargers, or at least West and play the Chargers. And then, you know, again, Thursday night game, it coming off of that Philly game, it feels like that's not a great scenario to be in.
It's a tough spot, but I do think that, you know, if there's one thing that I actually do have some confidence in, I still do believe in the Vikings defense, and I still do believe in their ability to cause havoc. And Herbert's had six picks in the last five games. You're missing Najee and you're missing Hampton, right? Like, I do think that there's an opportunity. Right, they're both still out, right? I think Hampton's still out for this game.
Yes, yeah. He's still out. Okay, Vidal has been their primary back, yep.
Yeah, and that's just, I mean, Hampton, I remember in the Giant game, it was like, how can you not give him the football? I think he had like, you know, 120 yards on 8 carries or something. So this offense, Keenan Allen's been good. Whoever the tight end is who just had a monster game, like, there's not a ton of pieces that really scare me with the Charger offense other than Justin Herbert. McConkey hasn't been as good this year as we were kind of expecting. I do think this is a spot where the Vikings can be, if they're opportunistic and get a couple turnovers, it's going to come down to the turnover battle. I know it's kind of a cop-out to say, but that's what's doomed both these teams in their losses, is Herbert turned it over against the Giants like crazy. Herbert turned it over against the Colts. And then Wentz has the pick sixes. Like, who's going to cause more havoc? That's sort of what it comes down to me.
Totally fair.
Yeah. Ziggy, any prediction on that one?
I'm out on the Minnesota Vikings. I don't think we're going to win this one. I like the Chargers at home with their tackles coming back. Carson Wentz is not going to get it done this game. I think it's a get right game for the Chargers offense and the Chargers defense.
We'll be right back. What's going on, everyone? I am so excited to tell you about this new game-changing product that I've been using before a big night out. It's called Pre-Alcohol. ZBiotics Pre-Alcohol Prebiotic Drink is the world's first genetically engineered prebiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's a buildup of this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for rough days after drinking. Now, pre-alcohol produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. So just remember to make pre-alcohol your first drink of the night, drink responsibly, and you'll feel your best tomorrow. Listen, I get it. I was on the fence about pre-alcohol initially myself, but I've now used it for bachelor parties, fall cookouts, and at a huge tailgating event, and I'm telling you, it's the real deal. And guess what? Football is here, which means more opportunities to get out there with your friends and celebrate the season. So before that backyard barbecue brew, post-touchdown mixer, or cocktail by the campfire, don't forget your Z-Biotics pre-alcohol. Drink one before drinking and wake up feeling great and ready to take on the next day and all that football season has to offer. So go to zbiotics.com/packaday to learn more and get 15% off your first order when you use code PACKADAY at checkout. Z-Biotics is backed with a 100% money-back guarantee, so if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember to head to zbiotics.com/packaday and use the code PACKADAY at checkout for 15% off. Make sure to support our partners and use that code PACKADAY.
So I want to ask you guys, with the Bears winning their fourth in a row now, at what point, how many will it take for you guys to finally look at Chicago and go like, all right, like we have to take them seriously? Because 4-2 now, they go to Baltimore this week. I think Lamar is actually going to miss the game. In which case, I feel pretty good if I'm a Bears fan.
Vegas seems to apparently think not, or that it doesn't matter. Baltimore is favored by 6.5 in that game. It is a weird scenario where there's no injury for the Bears and the 4-2 team is playing the 1-5 team, and the 1-5 team is a 6.5 point favorite. Like, you just don't see that very often at all. But yeah, I think the Lamar thing is going to be a real interesting aspect of this game. If he plays, I mean, I feel like Baltimore wins this pretty easily. If he doesn't, that I would season probably over. Say, yeah, it's Chicago. Yeah. I think Chicago just wins. To answer your initial question, I think the Bears are firmly in pain in the ass category. I don't think they're competitors. Maybe they make a run at like the 7 seed, 6 seed, something like that. But I don't think like this is their, like, we're making a run towards things in the playoffs or things like that. But they're firmly in pain in the ass where it's like you're not excited to play that team.
Yeah, and if the Bears want to prove themselves, John Harbaugh did say Lamar's going to be back for this game. So I'd expect.
Oh, is he officially? Because I thought he missed practice.
It's not official. He's still listed as limited, but Harbaugh said he thinks Lamar's going to be back. The Bears can prove they're legit next week if they want. If you go into Baltimore and at least keep that game close, I think asking them to win is a lot. But if they look competitive in that game, suddenly these wins against the Saints and the Commanders and the Raiders and the Cowboys take on a little bit of a different character. Right. The only, I think, solid team they've played this year, Detroit, on the road, they got absolutely run out of the building. But if the Bears are able to go to Baltimore and play decent football, suddenly I'm looking at those Bengals games, that Giants game, even on the road in Minnesota, and thinking this team has a decent chance of going to the playoffs.
Yep.
The Dallas win looks it feels like that looks better and better every week, too, with the way Dak has played. I mean, they stifled them in Chicago, and that defense has been playing a lot better. They made life hell for Spencer Rattler. I know is starting to get a little steam from some people, and he was bad. He had a lot of turnovers. They made him make a lot of mistakes, and they kind of had a Viking-esque game, though. They were 2-for-6 in the red zone. That was another one of those games where Chicago probably should have won that by a lot more than 12 points. But I feel I'm with you, Andy. The pain in the ass category sounds perfect. I think they're close, though. Like Caleb's not playing great yet. And he's still so young and early on in Ben Johnson, where I'm watching Chicago thinking, okay, if he can turn it on later in the year and they're going to be probably like, you know, 6-3, maybe their next two games after that are the Bengals and Giants. If they're 6-3 and Caleb starts playing, like I think the Bears, it's kind of crazy to say, but their fan base should really be thinking about if we can win these division games, we have a shot for the division. It's like that's a little out there. I don't expect it to happen, but they're going to have the record where if things break their way and their quarterback can elevate to the level they need him to, like they'll be in the running.
It's a little bit of a different scenario, but it took until the second half of Jordan Love's first season until he felt a lot more comfortable Caleb played last year and Jordan was in year three and all those things are a little bit different, but in a new system with Ben Johnson, if all of a sudden in the second half, like you're saying, Caleb, it clicks for him and all of a sudden starts taking off. And we know the talent's there. He's number one overall pick and expected to be one of those generational quarterbacks for a reason. If that all of a sudden happens, yeah, then we go from pain in the ass to like, oh, you know, this is a problem really, really fast.
No, and I think it's actually on the board. Like it's a lot of people are going to hear me say that and probably say like, okay, Paul, come on. Like are we really going to take the Bears that seriously? But I do think they're close and we'll see which way it swings over the second half of the year, but they really are just an improved Caleb away from from being really like the defense has a lot of playmakers. The offense, we know a lot of guys who are explosive. I'd be really pumped up as a Chicago fan, and knowing the Bears, it'll find some way to fall apart. But I think the Love comparison's pretty good there. Where if they turn it on, that could be a real problem. And
I will say that Cowboys win looks a lot better, but man, does that Vikings loss look so much worse. That Vikings team is terrible. That I can't believe they lost to that team.
Right. You say it in jest, but seriously, that Viking loss was like...
They were the Bears were the better team in that game. That was a bizarro fourth quarter, and you know, kudos to McCarthy and the Vikings for figuring out a way to win. You don't apologize for it, but I mean, imagine that, by the way. Imagine the difference in both seasons right now if that just fourth quarter does not happen and Chicago's sitting at their 5-1. Chicago is at 5-1 on top of the conference.
Yeah.
On top of the conference at 5-1, and Minnesota's sitting at 2-4. And it looks even far more bleak than where it's at right now. Like that is a huge fourth quarter in hindsight.
It seems like we're sort of at the breaking point here, or the turning point of the season, where there's a lot of, and particularly in the NFC, where there are a lot of teams who have put themselves in the running. And now we're just going to have to see who separates themselves. And there's a lot of these matchups. A lot of these matchups are between these teams as well coming up. So who's your guys' pick to break out of the pack? Those are the questions that we're going to be answering over the next couple of weeks, which should be really exciting.
You mentioned a turning point as well. The one thing I will say, I think we really solidified. There wasn't a lot that we maybe solidified in week 7, but we really solidified. Like there are a handful of really, really bad, completely non-contending, just bottom feeder teams, including the New Orleans Saints, who are now at 1-6, the Miami Dolphins, who are now at 1-6, the Tennessee Titans, who are now at 1-6, the Raiders, who are at 2-5 and just looked absolutely abysmal. The Jets are at 0-7. Like those five in particular are just, you can look at those now and just say, all right, we have five of the worst teams in the NFL completely figured out, and it's going to be a long rest of the season for those five. Now I think we'll start to turn the page and start to solidify some of these top teams a little bit more.
So as we look ahead now, we could do our predictions for week 8 before we get out of here. I do want to say, since Detroit's on a bye and we haven't touched on them, do you guys think at this point, are they your number one team in the NFC?
I think it's fair.
Yeah, probably.
Is Green Bay number two for you, Andy?
Yeah, I think those two are like hand in hand right now. And Philly's still going to be, I think, have a huge say in this, even though, you know what? I want to add one more in there. I think the Rams are a really good football team. Yeah. I think when Puka comes back and if Stafford can just stay healthy, I was this close to picking the Rams, or the Rams were going to be like one of my Super Bowl teams before the season. And then Stafford's back. I'm just like, I don't even know if he's going to make it into the season. Like, I didn't know what to do with that. But if he's healthy, he's fantastic. And with Devontae and Puka at wide receiver, their offensive line is playing better. I think their defense is just starting to scratch the surface of what they can become capable of. I think Jared Verse is one of the best defenders in the NFL already. Like, that's the team, honestly, that maybe isn't getting a ton of that buzz now, that I think is going to be a huge, huge problem if they can just stay healthy and, in Puka's case, get healthy.
Yeah, it's interesting to see. You can figure out, like, you can take a look at spreads in Vegas and see who they think are the best teams in the NFL. KC is number one. 2, 3, 4 are the Packers, Lions, and Rams in that order, with the Eagles below even that. Yeah. So I think you're right, Andy. Like, Vegas is higher on Green Bay and much higher on the Rams than the general public is, I think. I'm certainly worried about that LA team unless Matthew Stafford gets hurt.
Same.
Yeah, Very much same. I actually think I might go Rams, Lions, Packers. S tier to start the year was Rams, Lions, Eagles in the NFC. Philly, I'm dropping down, put Green Bay up there. But when you get this version of Stafford, who's 12 touchdowns and no picks over the last 4 weeks, and this week, you know, fed 5 without Puka even playing, I just think going into the playoff game, you're taking him over any NFC quarterback, assuming health, right? They are a scary team to me. And the Lions are right there, too.
We at least have to mention the Seahawks a little bit as well. Now, wins against the Steelers, Saints, Cardinals, Jaguars, and Texans, it's not the greatest stretch of teams in the world, but their two losses, San Francisco, they lose by 4. Tampa Bay, they lose by 3. Both really competitive games. That's another team where their defense flies around. I don't think they're going to win their division, but if you have to go to Seattle, that's a huge pain as well. Just monitoring is how I would put the Seattle Seahawks right now. I know that they're 5-2. They are right now number one in the NFC West. Just monitoring where that team kind of goes from here. They've got the Commanders, the Cardinals, in the next couple weeks, and then they've got a really big game at the Rams after that. I think we'll know a little bit more after that Rams game.
I think they're really good. And to me, they're one of those teams where it's another one of those, you know, Darnold doesn't have the implosion play and they should be like, they can beat almost anyone. And he did it last night.
Three implosion plays last night and they still won.
No, that's the thing.
It was the Texans, but yeah.
Yeah.
That defense is so good.
Yeah. That's what I mean. It's like they're that good where you could afford to have he had a fumble recovery for a touchdown last night.
Yes.
Like, they lost the turnover battle 4-1.
The Seahawks literally every single time I look up, we're like, hey, Texans, you want this game? We're willing to just give you this game. Like we were happy to let you win. And the Texans just like, nah, we're you guys take this game. It was like a Midwest nice as well. Like, no, you have a good night. No, you have a good night. It was just like, it was remarkable.
I mean, if Sam doesn't throw the interception against Tampa and then they get a field goal there to win the game, which what they need like 25-30 yards to do so. They're sitting here at 6-1. I think we're talking about them the way we were talking about Tampa Bay last week before the Detroit game. We're like, all right, hey,
totally fair.
Darnold's looking like an MVP caliber guy at times, but that's the problem with Sam is he could be really, really good, and then he throws that game-losing interception or he has that fumble, and usually it's when he's, when you send a blitz at him at the right time, he panics. And that, I mean, obviously we know that from the Vikings last year, but if he avoids that, he's been awesome. And I love the way he responded last night, even after the fumble. Remember, he came back and just ripped that ball to JSN down the sideline. I was like, shit, he could really throw it. Like, Sam can really throw the football. But that's a good shout out for Seattle, too. So as far as the games go, okay. Cover the Lions, who are on a bye. The Vikings at the Chargers. Ziggy, you said you're going Chargers. How about you, Andy?
I'll take Chargers.
All right, I'll go by. I actually think the Vikings are going to win the game just to make it more stressful going into the Detroit game.
All right.
Next, we have, where are the Bears? Bears going to Baltimore, with Lamar. Let's say Lamar plays.
Baltimore. I think Baltimore gets right. They're coming off a bye. Lamar comes back, and they're going to make a run at some point. Sounds like as good of a time as they need to start that run.
I have Baltimore winning, but I think the Bears offense is solid and the Ravens defense is really, really, really bad. I think the Bears can actually cover this and keep it close.
I might. Is it crazy that I'm starting to think Chicago could win this game?
Yes, it is.
I don't know. I don't know why. And I didn't feel this way up until about 15 seconds ago. But the Ravens defense, Ziggy, has been really bad. And Derrick Henry hasn't been great this year. I think I'm going to go with the Bears. I'm going to take Chicago in a shocking upset, which maybe is grounds for terminating our podcast. But I'm going to go Chicago. And just, I guess I'm contradictory this week. So Packers at Steelers, the last one. I'm going to go because we'll let you go last on this one, Andy. I'm going to pick Green Bay to win a very fun Sunday night game.
I don't think it's going to be very fun. I think Green Bay is going to go in there and blow them out. I've been very low on the Steelers all year. I think that people have been looking for TJ Watt to make the big play that changes the game. If he couldn't do it against Joe Flacco and the Cincinnati Bengals, he's not going to do it against Jordan Love and the Packers. I've got the Packers winning this by double digits. I'm not worried one bit.
I said it before. I think this is going to be the rare situation I pick against Green Bay. Weird things happen in Pittsburgh. Rodgers chip on his shoulder. Not a perfect matchup. I think there's some things that Pittsburgh does well that Green Bay doesn't. Green Bay's just been a little bit off. Might be the wake-up call that they ultimately need. I think they go on a little bit of a win streak after this one. Pittsburgh wins by 1 or 2 points on a last-second field goal, where if they miss it, they lose. If they make it, they win. And they make it at the end to win by 1 or 2 points.
All right. Is that the first time you've picked against them this year?
This season, yeah, so far. So we'll see.
I think I've picked them every game except Detroit week 1 so far. But yeah, I mean, that's And it would be a huge win for you guys. I think it would be the perfect way to get some momentum going, beat Carolina, and then the huge Philadelphia game.
Yeah, very much so.
It's going to be a lot of fun Packer games coming up. All right, we can wrap it up there. We'll see what happens week 8 here. And yeah, it starts pretty quick in the NFC North with Thursday Night Football. So at least Ziggy will have a little bit of a break on Sunday. We'll get some relief from what has been a very frustrating season. I will still end it, though, with the skull. Because you gotta stick by your guys.
And I will just say, I hope that I'm 1,000,000% wrong. I'm sure your Vikings fans are going to be very happy that I picked against Green Bay. I'm sure people on Packaday are going to be very upset that I picked the Steelers. I have the right to change my opinion through the course of the week. It's not lead pipe locked in yet, but that's just how I'm feeling at this very moment. But I hope that I'm wrong. You guys have a great week. Best of luck on Thursday Night Football. I'll certainly be watching and seeing very closely what that game looks like. And of course, we'll all be watching Sunday Night Football, Aaron Rodgers versus the Green Bay Packers. It's going to be fun, and we'll break it down all here next week. Paul Farrington Show, Packaday Podcast, Paul, Ziggy, Andy. Until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.